Well, David, we'll be at the Bay Area UFO Expo the end of September. I'll be up there as well. We've got information on the coasttocoastam.com website. David's websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com now, and also Wednesday, October 1st. He'll be at the Million Dollar Theater, which is on Broadway in downtown Los Angeles. Those doors open up at 6 p.m. David, you mentioned briefly the reptilians, which, of course, years ago you got into in a big, big way.
Uh-huh.
Is it still viable, or have you backed off on that?
Oh, I've not backed off at all, no. In fact, the more that I travel and the more that I learn, as I said to somebody the other day, it's funny, the more apparently extreme things that I've said in the past are getting more and more confirmation all the time. I came across a lot of different experiences that people had and information that people were giving me in Croatia alone about this whole thing. And in Croatia, the people I spoke to had no problem with that at all. People are opening their minds more and more to other possibilities. But like I say, I don't think it's the origin of all this. I think it's another level of it playing out. You know, there were some very interesting words that you're playing about the occult at the top of the
yes, with Jordan Maxwell. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree with all of that. And absolutely, what was said there, what he said. But as the if you like the human level is of hierarchy and apparent power is keeping the population in the dark about information and agendas and knowledge. So that level is kept in the dark by the next level, which goes off planet and into other dimensions. It's not that the pyramid ends with the people who are the advanced, if you like, occultists in human form. That's another level of the pyramid, because we have pyramids within human society where, you know, banking pyramids and political pyramids and government pyramids, yeah, but there's a bigger pyramid which actually moves out of this dimension into other levels of power. And this is where we really need to open our minds to. Otherwise, we're just seeing another level of the pyramid and not the top of it. And that's what I'm pursuing all the time. And do I know what the top of the pyramid is? No, I don't, but I'm doing everything I can to get there. So this reptilian thing and this other dimensional thing and these extraterrestrial levels of it, they're still it playing out within what I increasingly am seeing is just a gigantic virtual reality, like a computer game, but then there's some consciousness that's actually behind it, and all these other levels are different levels of the game. But in terms of the reptilian thing, no, I think there are different levels of it. I think there are reptilian entities that operate just outside of the tiny, tiny frequency range we call visible light that our eyes can access, and that they are able to possess particularly certain bloodlines that have a hybrid DNA, and like everything, whether it's DNA or this wall I'm looking at, it's a vibrational construct, it's a vibrational field, and so the more compatibility that vibrational field has with that which wishes to connect with it, i.e. possess, the more powerful and effective that connection, quote, possession can be. And so the more that I've understood this, that there are different levels of it. There is the level that happens in human society, which is secret societies manipulating certain bloodlines into power, mm-hmm. and the agents of those bloodlines into power, and the gophers and pawns of those bloodlines into power. But those bloodlines carry a hybrid DNA which has a vibrational compatibility with a possessing entity, and therefore these particular bloodlines are most powerfully able to be possessed by these entities, and that's what they're doing when they're manipulating these bloodlines into power. They're manipulating the vehicle within this reality into power so that the real power can operate into this dimension and manipulate it while not actually being seen, not actually being within the range of visible light. I mean, this whole thing about possession goes back as far as what we call history goes back, and therefore when we look at these people in power, of course, because we're looking with our five sense sight, if you like, we are decoding that level of these people, which operates within that frequency range. And what do we see? We see human forms, human bodies, yes. But if we could tease out our range of visible perception frequency, we would see a very different entities overshadowing them and controlling their mental and emotional process.
Almost shape-shifting, David.
Yeah, they're like shells. And this is the other thing you see. One of the challenges in all this, George, is that there is so much information to understand, and this is why suppression of knowledge and information is so, so vital to all this. There are so many different things to understand before the apparently ludicrous takes on a logical perception. And when you're dealing with the mainstream media, of course, what you're dealing with is people that want everything in 30 seconds or a minute, and everything's on a level of total superficiality. And so when people talk about my information in the mainstream, I think the world's run by lizards, he's mad, and all that. That's it, you know. And I say to them, do you not think there's a bit more to that, you know? And so we come to shapeshift. Impossible. Can't be shapeshift. Is ridiculous. Well, if we were talking, George, about a shift from a solid body to a different form of solid body, yes, that would be impossible. But we're not, because we are living in what I call the holographic internet. If you look at the internet, you can log on it with a computer, etc. Anywhere in the world, you can log on to that collective reality.
Yep.
Which is the internet. Doesn't matter if you're in China or Australia, America, anywhere, you're logging into the same collective reality. Where you go within that reality and what you make of it, that is where we get our individual perception and choices, but we have the same reality. Now, when you say to people, tell me about the internet, they say, it's websites and it's colors and graphics and text on a screen. Well, the only place the internet exists in that form is on the screen. Nowhere else. Nowhere else. It's electrical circuits and all the rest of it. You say to people, "Tell me about television." Oh yeah, well, it's moving pictures on a screen. Yeah, no, yes, on one level, yes, but on most levels, that's not the case. The only place television exists in that form of moving pictures on the screen is on the screen.
It's on the receiver end. Yeah.
Everywhere else, it's electrical circuits and vibrational fields. And what the television's doing and what the computer's doing is decoding those messages, electrical messages, vibrational messages, whatever, into what you perceive on the screen. Now, we're doing that through the body computer. And the only place that this world exists in this apparently solid form that we experience every day is on the screen, and the screen is in the brain, and the brain itself is just a vibrational field, if you want to go into deeper levels of it. And so we are decoding our reality in this basically same principle as a computer and a television. For instance, I'm sitting in this room now. If there was wireless internet in this room, I would be sitting here and I wouldn't be able to see it. I'd just look around the room and I'd see exactly what I'm seeing now. But I get a computer and I log it onto the internet. That computer will pull out of the invisible, out of the completely unseen, the whole World Wide Web onto its screen.
At your fingertips.
Yeah, and that's what we're doing. Now, relating this to shape-shifting, it's not the only place that the shift takes place from one body form to another is in the decoding in our computer of that shift in the energy field. In the simplest terms, it's like having the zapper button in your hand, pressing channel 1, pressing channel 2, pressing channel 1, and the to the observer, it's something on the screen, something different on the screen, same thing back on the screen. Did you see that? And so when people see this shape-shifting thing, and, you know, I didn't sit in some darkened room smoking a weed thinking, I think shape-shifting, I think it's reptilians. No, I've been to 46 countries now researching this, and you find the same stories, accounts everywhere you go. When you people are comfortable with telling you their experiences. And so what's happening is there is a shift in the energy field that we are decoding. And as that shift takes place, we see human. Then the non-human field level comes forward, and we're decoding that. And then the human one comes forward, and we're decoding that. And in our to the observer, what they're seeing is solid human body, solid non-human body, solid human body. So shape-shifting is not the movement of solid to solid, because there is no solid. That's why, you know, scientists and stuff in quantum physics, they point out that this solid world is made of atoms. Well, atoms have no solidity. They're little packets of energy, that's all. And so how can they form a solid world? They can't. And what's more, they don't, because the world's not solid. And when you get to these levels looking at the world, George, and you realize that all this knowledge is suppressed in the mainstream. I mean, the big questions are never asked in the mainstream of public awareness, like the media, etc., and education. The big questions aren't asked. And so if you don't ask the big questions, you don't get the big answers. And so if you are a few relative to the population who understand all this stuff about reality and how we create it and decode it, they understand how to manipulate what we decode, therefore what we see and what we perceive. And, you know, I've told this story before, but it's so powerful. Michael Tolbert, in his book, The Holographic Universe, brilliant book. Brilliant book. And because it was right. This is a holographic universe, and everything from a speck of dust to the universe is a hologram, and it's therefore has illusory physicality, illusory three-dimensional form. And in his book, he tells the story of his father having a party with a stage hypnotist along doing party tricks, and there was this guy called Tom who was put under hypnotic trance and what they do. And towards the end of it, the hypnotist said, "When I bring you back to a waking state, you're not going to be able to see your daughter in the room." At which point, he led the daughter to stand in front of Tom, and so he's looking into her stomach. And he brings him apparently out of a waking state, and he asks him, "Tom, can you see your daughter in the room?" And he looked around, and he couldn't. He's looking into her stomach. The hypnotist goes behind the back of the daughter and puts his hand in the bottom of her back and says, "I'm holding something, Tom. What am I holding?" He says, "What are you holding? A watch." It seemed obvious to him. He says, "An inscription on the watch. Can you read it?" He peered forward. He read the inscription. Now, if I said that, people in mainstream society, they'd say what they've been saying about me for 20 years. "You're mad. That's impossible." No, it's not. And this is where we go back, George, to what I said earlier. It's not impossible. It's outside of your perception of what is possible. And that's why you're enslaved into limitation when you could be massively expanded consciousness and seeing this world from a completely different angle and a much bigger picture. What's happening in that example is that the prime state of everything in this reality is actually an energetic construct, an energetic coding system, if you like. And so we are decoding those energetic vibrational constructs into apparently solid form, a holographic form. This is why I say the only place that this world exists in its form that we experience it is actually in our minds. And because the hypnotist had programmed this guy Tom, his brain, not to decode that particular energy field, which was his daughter, he did not bring her through from the energetic into a holographic form. And therefore, in his decoded reality, which is the one we experience every day, she did not exist because he hadn't brought her forward to that level of decoding. And you know, you can program a computer not to decode certain things, and it won't bring them on the screen. It's the same basic principle. And what's great now, and what the shaman and the seers and the knowledge carriers of what we call the past have not had, is we now have the tools for analogy, the tools for not even symbolizing now, because the, you know, the computer system and the World Wide Web is so close in principle to our reality, and we have these symbols that we can really get across what the nature of reality is like. In the past, the shaman had to use symbolic stories that related to what people understood at the time in their society, and that's why, you know, official historians and anthropologists, they say they were very primitive. You know, they were saying that the eagle of the mountain flew into his heart. I mean, it's ridiculous. And when actually it was just symbolism to try to get across a concept, which we can now do because we understand about vibrational fields, we understand about the World Wide Web, understand about computers decoding a reality out of the ether like the wireless internet. So this is a great time when we can start to really get an understanding of what reality is. And that's what this conspiracy doesn't want us to have, because that will lead us to understanding the true and extraordinary genius and infinite possibility that we all are. And we break out of these prisons of limitation, which are the very basis, the very foundation of the enslavement. In the end, it's a mind game. It plays out in various ways, but it's a mind game, and we need to take our minds back.
Can we, David? Can we win?
Well, I think the first thing I would say is I've never seen this, and I don't see this as winning and losing. Once we get into winning and losing, we're getting into the mindset of that which controls us. We need to stop cooperating with our own enslavement. I mean, I'll give you an example. I watched some of the protests, which were on the internet and what have you, at the Democratic Convention. And I saw people shouting slogans, chanting and stuff like that, and confronting people and in the street and all the rest of it. And that's fine. You know, if people want to do that, that's great. But then they went home, and the Democrats went home, and nothing changed. And from my perspective, you know, and everyone to their own, this is my perspective, what I was watching was people shouting at the movie screen, demanding that the movie change. Ain't going to change. Can't change on the screen. Has to change at the projection level. But even in everyday levels, nothing's going to change by doing that. What we need to do is stop cooperating with our own enslavement, for instance, and work on the basis that one person's injustice is all of our injustice. In Britain now, George, it's got to the most extraordinary levels of Orwellian imposition. We're having people fined £75 for putting their trash bin out on the wrong day. We're having people fined £100 for putting a card in their car, their own car, advertising it for sale. It is the most extraordinary levels of imposition right into the fine detail of our lives. And when someone puts their wheelie bin out and gets fined £75, what you get is people shouting at the screen, and they go, "What's the world coming to? This is outrageous, bureaucratic, you know, gone mad, and all the rest of it." But after they've shouted at the movie screen, nothing changes, and the person's still paying the fine, and the next one to do it still gets fined. What we need to do is saying that injustice is our injustice. So for the next however long it takes, we're all, thousands and thousands of us, we're going to put wheelie bins out on the wrong day all the time until that law is changed. And if necessary, we'll go and surround the council building and we'll do whatever's necessary to peacefully make sure that law is changed.
Let's pick up when we come right back, David. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls with David Icke. We'll be back with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And David, when you saw the signs years ago, what is happening now, is this the time period you thought it would start to unravel?
Well, it was kind of, yeah. I felt that towards the end of the 1990s that the agenda timescale was behind where it was planning to be. And I thought then, you know, something needs to happen here if they're going to push this on. And, of course, we got 9/11, and that's massively pushed it on because of the justification used through that horrific event to introduce the agenda that was in the background before it happened, play out, justified by that horrific event that is, shall we say, a little bit different to the official story that we're told about it. And this is now widely and more widely understood. And this period up to 2012 is very, very important to this agenda. I keep seeing the year 2012 keep coming up over the years in terms of when they really want this thing to be at an advanced
stage,
level.
Yeah,
and it would seem on the face of it to be connected into this whole Mayan information about 2012 and the end of one period of a human cycle and or an Earth cycle and then the start of another one. I think that this period of 2012, personally, I don't see, you know, everything changing in, you know, 1 minute and 1 day and 1 month in 2012. But what I do think that this represents is a enormous vibrational change that's taking place, which is acting like an alarm clock to more and more people, where they are suddenly waking up and looking at things that they would have dismissed or even not looked at before. And, you know, long, long ago, it seems lifetimes ago now, in 1990, when I went to a psychic, first psychic I'd ever been to, in England, and I went to her because I had for almost the entire 1989, and it got more and more powerful as that year unfolded. I had this feeling, which I completely didn't understand, that when I was in a room alone, I wasn't there. There seemed to be a presence there, and in the end, towards the end of 1989, and into early 1990, it became very, very powerful. When I was in a room alone, there was definitely something there. And I sat down on a bed one day when I was working for the BBC, and I was in a hotel room, and I said, you know, if there's something there, would you please contact me? You'll drive me up the wall. And just after that, it's a long story, but I connected, and a very strange story, but I connected into this psychic. And I went to her, and all I said to her was, you know, I've got arthritis, which I have, and maybe your hands-on healing might help because, you know, conventional medicine hasn't and all the rest of it. And I give her no clue about what I'd really gone for, which is I wonder if she'll pick up the presence I'm feeling around me. And after a couple of visits, which were hands-on healing, a very nice and nice chat, and she was talking about other dimensions and stuff, and I thought, well, that's interesting, makes sense to me. Then I went the third time, and suddenly she launches her head back at one point and said, my God, this is powerful. I've got to close my eyes for this one. And she starts just saying she's seeing a figure in her mind, and the figure is asking her to pass information to me. And interestingly, the opening line was, we know he wanted us to contact him, but the time wasn't right. And she had no idea about that thing in the hotel room. Would you please contact me and drive me out the wall? Anyway, what then unfolded, which with hindsight was staggering, and indeed at the time I thought was, you are having a laugh, mate. I was at the time presenting sport for the BBC. I'd been a news journalist as well at one point, and I was national spokesman for the British Green Party. And here's this lady telling me that there's some figure she's seeing in a psychic sight, which is saying that I am going to go out eventually on a world stage and I'm going to reveal great secrets, that there was information that people needed to know, that I would write 5 books in 3 years, which I thought is ridiculous on these subjects. I know nothing about these subjects. What are you talking about? But I did it to the month when I look back. And basically what I've done, another thing was he will face enormous opposition, but they, she decoded it, what they said, but we will always be there to protect him. I still don't know who we are, but I'm really bothered. It's a matter of doing what you believe is right every day. But the reason I tell this story in relation to that question is one of the things that happened, and everything that I was told that day, apart from one thing, has happened or is happening extraordinarily all these years later. And one of the things that was in there was there is going to be a spiritual revolution in his lifetime, and basically humanity is going to wake up from its trance. And of course, when you're talking about 1990, George, I mean, we weren't much sign of it, to be honest. And, you know, for a long time.
And you looked like a rebel at that time.
Yeah,
don't you?
I was going around the world talking to audiences that would struggle to fill a phone booth, mate. I mean, I went around America in as late as 1996, and I was talking to a handful of people. I spoke in Chicago to 8 people. You know what I mean? Jeez. I said I would have been cheaper to ring you, but then suddenly it exploded. And the point is that over this period of nearly 20 years. I have seen this awakening. I mean, Croatia was a terrific little boost for me last week, and confirmation for me that people who were really in the mainstream in Croatia were really waking up to this stuff. And so, yes, there is this revolution taking place in the minds of so many people and the hearts of so many people, and we're moving in towards this period of 2012, which I see as a window of time rather than one day. 1 year. And at the same time, they are aware that this is coming. And I think going back to an earlier point you made, I think this is a big part of the panic to get these structures into place of control, and particularly the microchip, to suppress this awakening by manipulating the body computer, not to decode the level of frequency that is becoming available to people, which is waking them up, breaking the concrete, and expanding their minds. And it's not just microchipping, it's all this rubbish, the chemical cocktails and electromagnetic pollution that we're subjected to in food and drink and the environment. This is all part of this effort to suppress the ability of people to decode the range of frequencies that's now becoming available. But those who are having spontaneous awakenings. Why didn't I see it before? I don't understand. It's so obvious. Because you're just woken up from the trance, that's why. And you're now accessing a much wider range of possibility, and the box is starting to break up, because in the end it's a vibrational box. The box is the range of frequencies that we can decode and therefore perceive in terms of reality and possibility, and the box is breaking up for vast numbers of people around the world, and it's an exponential curve. And so we're in an extremely interesting time, shall we say, when on one side you've got this Orwellian agenda unfolding very fast to put the lid down, and then you've got this awakening which is pushing the lid up. And the next few years are going to be extremely interesting to experience and observe, that's for sure. And but we need to turn, this is the point, we need to turn awakening consciousness into change, because there's this line, knowledge is power. Not true. The use of knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. You know, if I have knowledge that something's going to happen,
and you don't use it,
then it happens. I have the knowledge, but I've had no influence on events. We have to use that knowledge, and we have to start first of all breaking down these fault lines of division of religious belief and political belief and all these things. And we have to start realizing that this is not a conspiracy to enslave Jewish people or Islamic people or middle-class Americans. It is an agenda to enslave all of us. And if we don't put down these irrelevant fault lines that divide us and start focusing together on what affects us all, and more than this, George, affects our kids and grandkids, because the time's coming when we're gonna have to look them in the eye and tell them what we were doing when all this was unfolding, and there's a lot of people in this world currently who are going to have to avert their eyes when they're telling them what they were doing. We need to now put these fault lines of division down, see what affects us all, and start working together to cease to cooperate with this system, because billions cannot be controlled by a few unless the billions control each other and divide and rule each other and fight among each other, and therefore don't look up and see the hands attached to strings that are attached to both them and the people that they're having their conflict with.
David, when we talk about they, we really, do we know who they might be?
Well, like I said earlier, George,
or the nameless people.
I think it's multi-leveled. You've got they, which are these bloodline families that go back to the ancient world, who sit at the top of the banking system, top of the political system, top of the transnational corporations, etc., etc. But they are shells, if you like, for entities that exist outside of visible light, human sight, most of the time anyway. You've also got connections, I'm sure, you know, around the world. There are underground bases where there is non-human-human interaction. I'm absolutely certain of that. And in fact, in the last few days, I've got confirmation of it, which was connected into this whole thing about the European Union funding new railways in Eastern Europe for the World Army, and I'm going to follow that up and get more information on that. But absolutely, there's physical interaction too within this five sense reality between non-human and human people and entities to advance this agenda. But in the end, if you keep going, all these levels are playing out. The game playing out. I'm absolutely convinced of it. And in the end, you're going to find some kind of a consciousness, that a disembodied consciousness, that is behind this massive virtual reality computer game, which we're all part of. And if you're in a computer game, you don't realize you're in a computer game, and then the computer game controls you, because illusions only control you when you think they're real. When you realize the situation you're in, you start to have power to control your reality and to control your experience, because you understand the game and you understand the situation you're in. When you don't, when you're in ignorance of it, and vast numbers of people will bang this table and say, yeah, it's solid, it's got to be solid. Well, it's not. And when you're dealing with the vast majority of people who are seeing reality in that way, when the few absolutely know how it all fits together and how illusory it is, then they're in a position of massive power. So understanding the banking scams and the political scams must go together with expansion of consciousness and expansion of awareness of what reality is and how we create it, decode it, etc. Otherwise, all we're doing is learning more and more about our own prison and not finding the key to the door.
David, it's fascinating on one end, but it's frightening on the other. And I don't know which one we can handle.
Well, you know, the funny thing is fear is an expression of ignorance to a large extent, and it's an expression of this reality, which is to such a massive amount based on fear in all its forms. When you expand your consciousness and you move from self-identity with what you see in the mirror, i.e., I'm Bill Smith, Ethel Jones, to I am infinite consciousness, having an experience as Bill Smith or Ethel Jones, then the fear starts to go. People are saying to me all the time, like, don't you fear for your life? No. You know why? I can't die. I can leave my body. Yeah, of course I can do that. I can't die. I'm infinite consciousness. So, I leave my body you know, have you ever met someone who had a near-death experience? George, you wanted to come back. I mean, you know, and this is what we're dealing with here is I was sitting in the bath a few months ago now, and I saw a kind of picture came in my mind very clearly, and what it was billowing like clouds, which I knew instinctively was symbolic of consciousness, and then in this cloud an eye appeared, and then in front of the eye a telescope appeared, and on the end of the telescope was the Earth and this world we perceive, and then the telescope morphed into a human body. And it really hit me. I got a friend of mine to Neil Haig, brilliant artist, to paint it. And it's symbolic of what this reality is. We are infinite consciousness, but we experience this reality. And I guess, you know, it's just something to experience and to, you know, just, well, experience, I guess. I would say even learn from, because we know everything anyway, because we're infinite consciousness. But and the body computer acts like a lens which brings our focus into this reality where we see things as apart from everything else. And that's fine, but if you get so caught in that sense of identity, you disconnect from your awareness of the greater self. And once you disconnect from awareness of the greater self and have the ability to move your point of observation out of this reality and look in from outside symbolically, then where do you look for to get a fix on who you are, what's happening in your life, what's happening in the world, what the world is? You look out through the eyes and the ears and the five senses to get a fix on all those questions. Now, if the information coming back is controlled through the media, education, all the rest of it, and suppressed, then what's happening is two things. You're becoming isolated from an awareness of the greater self, and then that which has become isolated, what I call the bubble, is programmed with a reality through the eyes and the ears, and it's a reality based on limitation, powerlessness, and all the rest of it. And that's what basically the whole basis of human control is. It's isolating us from awareness of the true infinite nature that we are, and then programming that, if you like, isolated level of consciousness with a perception of reality of self in the world. And so when you wake up and you start to reconnect with, because we're always reconnect, we're always connected, we're always infinite consciousness. Sure. The question is, are we aware of that? And what happens when you wake up and these programmed barriers break down? Then you start to move your point of observation into the greater level of consciousness. Then you are in this world, but not from your point of observation of it. And that's when you look in and you see everything that's unfolding from a completely different angle. And you go, oh, God, it's so obvious. Look at it. But it's not obvious when you are isolated in the telescope and seeing everything only from that perspective of limitation and apartness. And the biggest expression of the this limitation and seeing everything as a part is the left brain. You know, the left brain is the prison that most people live in. And I spoke to some students a few months ago now at Oxford University. This elite, they're clever, they're so clever, but clever and cleverness and wisdom are not the same thing. That's what we forget. But I spoke to these students about the conspiracy and about the nature of reality, the holographic nature of the universe and everything. And it's kind of funny because when I come to America and speak in Santa Clara and Los Angeles in the next couple of weeks, I will give people everything that I can in the time that I have, because the fact that they've come means that they are open and therefore can encapsulate.
And that's growing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's getting bigger and bigger.
But when I went to Oxford University to speak to these elite students who've passed all these exams and got to this elite university, I'm sitting in the hotel room in the afternoon waiting to go and do it, and I'm thinking, how do I put this in baby steps so these people are going to get it? Seriously.
Let's talk about that when we come back, and we'll take phone calls with David Icke on Coast to Coast AM.